Okay. Ah, it works now. Thank you. So, okay. So here we have the slide with samples that we use in our laboratory, different samples, different artificial samples. So we have some prosthetic eyes at the top of the slide. We have some pattern contact lenses. But what is important and what is dangerous in presentation attack detection iris recognition is that we can use iris printouts, paper printouts. I think that some of you are aware that we can use paper printouts to spoof iris cameras, but still we have a few cameras in our lab that are quite new that can accept paper printouts. And this is very dangerous because paper printouts can be used to impersonate someone. It means that we can print on the paper the pattern of the iris of someone and use this artificial object to impersonate this person. It is not possible with pattern contact lens, at least to my knowledge, because it is very difficult to print something on the contact lens that some concrete pattern on the contact lens. And it is also not possible with the prosthetic eyes, because on the prosthetic eyes we have some artistic vision of the person who is making this prosthetic eye. So we can use printed contact lens and prosthetic eyes to disguise the identity, but we can use the paper printouts to impersonate someone. And still, we have still cameras that can accept this, so this is very dangerous. Okay, so here is an example. Okay, it's an example from 2008, but as I told you, I have a few cameras that behave like this camera. We bought a very sophisticated camera in 2008, and I tried to check whether this camera accepts or not the paper printouts. And here is my paper printout that was accepted faster than my living eye. I don't know why. Maybe the paper printout is more stable or something like that. So it was funny, but after a few minutes, it is not funny. So. So what we can expect? We can expect some static imitations, paper printouts or artificial eyeballs, and so on, and printed contact lenses. And I found a few proposals that we can display something on a screen. And we did it, of course, in the laboratory, and it doesn't work. So it doesn't work because iris cameras operate in near infrared. And our smartphones display invisible light, so those two cannot work together. So if we display something on smartphone, we cannot see this in professional iris camera, fortunately. But no, maybe in a few years we can see some devices that can display something in near infrared, and then it will start to be dangerous as well. Okay, I'm saying about paper printouts and so on, and you can think, okay, it's easy. It's easy to detect this kind of things. So we decided 3 years ago, we decided to check if it is easy or not. So we organized a first, I think it was the first liveness competition with University of Notre Dame and Clarkson University from United States. So Kevin Boyer and Stephanie Schackers were the organizers, and our university as well. And we had three data sets provided by those three institutions. We provided paper printouts, Stephanie and Kevin provided printed contact lenses. And again, we asked participants to send us liveness detection methods, and then these methods were evaluated using these three data sets. And unfortunately, it is not very easy to detect this kind of artifacts. Because if we see the results, if we, for instance, would like to take the most accurate or the most secure method, so it is the first bullet here. So just select the best, the most secure method that rejects 99% of paper printouts. Then this method incorrectly rejects 21% of living eyes. It means that if we implement this method, which is very secure because it rejects 99% of artifacts, this method adds 20% to false rejection rate of the entire system. So I don't know if someone wants to implement this kind of methodology. If we revert the scenario, so if we try to find the most convenient method, not introducing too much to false rejection rate, 5% here, this method accepts 12% of paper printouts. So as you can see, it's not very easy to detect this kind of artifacts. And if we take patterned contact lenses, it is even more difficult to detect these artifacts. So we can say it is a kind of state of the art if we look for independent evaluation. If you do your papers, of course, and you do some calculations in the lab, probably you can get zero equal rate even for liveness detection. If someone is evaluating your methodology, then these errors grow suddenly. Okay, so going further, we can expect some dynamic eye imitations. Of course, Hollywood knows how to spoof eye recognition systems. They are experts in that. So what we can expect here, some objects, but that can deform somehow. But what is the most probably dangerous here is the use of our iris under coercion. So if someone forces us or kindly asks us to present our eye to the camera, then it is very, very difficult to recognize this kind of spoofing, because the eye is authentic, but the eye is presented under coercion. Okay, so problems. Those slides presented only problems, so maybe start think about some solutions. So I would like to present a few countermeasures that we develop in our laboratory. Most of them were or are developed or researched in our laboratory, and I would like to present briefly in more details two of them. One, the simplest one, and one, the most sophisticated one. Okay, so some countermeasures for static eye imitations. The list is here, so probably we can imagine more methods here. Two of them are quite interesting. First is devoted to observation of the eye in infrared. So typically when we acquire the iris image, we illuminate the iris with near infrared, or sometimes with visible light, but mostly in near infrared light. It is the light that we use in iris recognition. But we can also check the thermal data. If we have the thermal camera, we can see pretty different images observing the eye in infrared that is emitted by our body, but by our eyeball. So we are checking now how it works in liveness detection. On the right hand side, you have the very beautiful image of our colleague from the lab, made by her husband, showing 3D nature of iris. Iris is a complicated meshwork of different fibers and muscles, and it is, in fact, it is 3D structure. So why we cannot use this 3D structure, 3D information, to check whether this iris is real iris or maybe a printout? And to measure some 3D properties of the iris, we can use, of course, two cameras. But it is complicated because we have double the cost of our equipment. But we can also use one camera and multiple illuminants placed in different places around the lens, and just evoke some shadows on the iris, switching on and switching off different illuminants. So it is the idea that we use to calculate some 3D properties of the iris. If we go for dynamic imitations and countermeasures for dynamic imitations, we may have dynamic. It means that if we measure some dynamics, we have to spend some time observing the eye. So what we can observe in time just looking at the eye. We can observe some spontaneous oscillations of the pupil. We can observe some dynamics of the eyeball. And here is the very good work by Texas University and Silesian University from Poland, Oleg Kolmogotsev and Paweł Kasprowski. They do a very good work related to eyeball dynamics, and recently I've seen some papers related to using this eyeball dynamics in liveness detection. So I think it is very difficult to copy the dynamics of the eyeball as the object. And the last thing is pupil dynamics. So this is one method that I would like to present you very briefly. It is quite obvious that if you switch on the light or switch off the light, then our pupil reacts. It is obvious, but maybe it is not very obvious that the shape of this reaction, the nature of this reaction, can be modeled. It is common to everybody, so it can be modeled. So we can build a model of a reaction of our pupil to light changes, and then use this model to compare whether the object that we observe reacts like a human eye, or maybe it's an artifact. Okay, so two methods. I selected only two methods. Why I selected those two methods? Because the first method, frequency analysis, is the simplest method that I have in mind that we can use without engagement any extra costs related to the equipment. So we do not need to make any changes in the camera that we already have. The only thing that we have to do is to make a simple program that will analyze our iris image from other point of view. And pupil dynamics, it is the polar opposite, I think, because it is the most sophisticated method. It takes some time, a few seconds to observe the eye, but it may work. I'm not sure, but it may work maybe under coercion also, because the pupil dynamics changes when we are under stress. Chris, I don't know if it works under alcohol. I'm sorry. I promise you to check this, but I hope I will check it finally after drinking the alcohol. Okay, so the first method, frequency analysis, it is very simple. If you look at the real eye on the left and right eye image on the right, then you can see that the pattern that results from printing on the paper have some regular texture. So we can just calculate the frequency Fourier transform, for instance, and calculate the amplitude spectrum, and we can see four peaks in the amplitude spectrum, and that result from this regular pattern that is in the image of the printout. So it's very simple. I think that idea of using frequency analysis was first proposed by John Dagman, I believe, 20 years ago or something like that. But there are a few methods that use this idea and propose some solutions. One of them is very easy. Just we have to calculate, we have to check what's going on in different frequency windows. So we can, for instance, select two rings, two windows, circular windows, and calculate the maximum value in the outer ring and relate this to the maximum amplitude value in the inner ring and calculate the liveness score. And this very simple method gives a very good accuracy, because we were able to detect 95% of printouts in the training data set used in live that iris competition, introducing no false rejection. So this very simple method can work pretty good. Of course, it is not 100% accurate, but on the other hand, without any engagement of any additional cost, any investment, you have the method that can correctly reject 95% of printouts without introducing any extra false rejection. So I'm quite happy with that. The second method is pupil dynamics. So as I said, the pupil reacts to light changes. If the light intensity grows, then our pupil constricts, and vice versa. If the light intensity is lower, then our pupil dilates. So it is very obvious behavior. But if we look at the shape of the of this reaction, then we can find some repetitive properties of this shape. It means that we can try to model this and look. Once our eye is acquired, we can observe this object, because we don't know if it is iris or not. We can observe this object and measure the dynamics and compare the model that we identify during each acquisition to the model that we have in our system that is developed before our before we check if it is alive or not. So from mathematical point of view, we have a model here. Here is an example model that we used finally in our work, but we checked, I don't know, maybe 10 models or something like that. And this model is very simple and works pretty good, so we decided to use this one. What does it mean? It means in blue ragged line here, you have the real reaction of the authentic eye. And in red, you have the model output, just using this real data. So the model, as you can see, is pretty good. So we can really describe the nature of pupil dynamics in a very good, very accurate way. What does it mean from mathematical point of view? From mathematical point of view, we have time series as the input, and we have the point in multidimensional space at the output, because what is this multidimensional space? It is the space of model parameters. Here we have 7 parameters that are enough to describe the shape of the reaction of the pupil. So we have some measurement. We observe our eye during 4 seconds, and we transfer this time series into a single point in multidimensional space of model parameters. So if we present our iris again, we have another point in this multidimensional space. Again, another point, and so on. So if we do this experiment many times, we have many points that should be somehow concentrated in this space. And if we repeat this experiment for some artifacts, we also have some points in this space, but probably located in different places in this space. So what we have to do, you can see that it goes towards very simple idea to make a classification. So the only thing that we need to do is to classify, to build a classifier that classifies our points into 2 groups, living or non-living samples. And here is the support vector machine that we use to classify these points, but of course we can use any classifier that we like or we believe that it works. And we use also goodness of fit, because it may happen by chance that some artifact or some non-living but dynamic object, for instance, someone may try to mimic the pupil dynamics. So by chance, we may have some points in this multidimensional space close to the cloud represented by living objects. But the goodness of fit, if we look at the fit and the real data, the goodness of fit may be very bad. So we decided to introduce another dimension in our decision-making system, goodness of fit. So we have 2. We have the output of the classifier and the goodness of fit. Okay, so here is an example movie or some frames selected from a movie that we collected in database in our laboratory. So we did quite a long acquisition during 30 seconds just to have enough data to make experiments. And in the middle of our experiment, we switched on the light to LED, so it was not very bright light. It was just to stimulate the pupil to constrict. And after 5 seconds, we switch off the light, and we have this shape in the middle here. It is very characteristic pupil reaction to switch off the light. So what we did to train this classifier and to check whether it works or not. We took the middle part of this graph as living examples. It is quite normal because this is a correct reaction of the eye that we should observe. And we have problems with artifacts. What to do, what to take as artifacts. We should mimic some pupil dynamics, but it is not very easy, and it depends on a person that tries to make this spoofing. We could take paper printouts, but it would be not fair because paper printouts are static, so it would be very easy to distinguish among the paper printouts and living eyes. So we decided to take the first part of this graph of this measurement as odd reaction of the eye. So we have some noise here, we have some hippus, it means we have some oscillations of the pupil, we have some blinks, we have some errors related to the segmentation, and so on. So we have enough noise to spoof our system, in fact, to spoof our model identification at time we do the measurement. So we divided our time series into two groups, two parts. Okay, and here is an example result for after making this experiment. We did this experiment for 50 different eyes. So as you can see, the classifier made some mistakes. The red dots at the top of this graph denote that classifier accepted, support vector machine accepted non-living or odd reaction, odd reaction to of the pupil to the light change. But if we take the goodness of fit, if we check the goodness of fit or how the model was, if we check the quality of the model identification and introduce some threshold for the goodness of fit, then we can obtain even perfect recognition of this odd reaction and living eyes. So this is why I decided to add the goodness of fit as one of the dimension of decision making process. Okay, and a few questions, of course. The first question: how long should we observe the eye? Because I don't like to spend 30 seconds, of course, looking at into the camera and just waiting for the answer of the system. So of course it is quite obvious that if we spend more time looking at the camera, then our modeling should be more accurate. You can see here the different horizons that we used: 5 seconds, 4 seconds, 3 seconds, and 2 seconds. And of course the quality of the modeling is worse if we spend only 2 seconds, for instance, looking at the camera. So to answer the question, how long should we spend looking into the camera? We did an entire experiment, and we calculated two metrics. They relate to false rejection rate and false acceptance rate in normal biometric system, but we decided to introduce separate metrics for liveness detection or presentation attack detection, just to separate them from regular performance evaluation. And we can see here in this graph, if we use the goodness of fit, so we have red dots. This is an acceptance of the artifacts using goodness of fit as well as together with the classifier. And blue circles, it is rejection of the living eyes. So we can see that if we spend 3 seconds, three and a half seconds, then we get perfect recognition for this database, of course. So it is perfect here, and in reality it will be pretty okay probably. So the best performance is after observing the eye for 3 seconds and so I think that spending 3 seconds behind the camera is not very disturbing. In fact, normal acquisition process takes a few seconds in typical iris recognition system. Of course, we have cameras that can do this in a fraction of seconds, but most of them, at least those cameras that we have in the lab and we just use every day in our work, we have to spend a few seconds just looking at the camera. So maybe during this acquisition period, we can use another camera or use maybe the same camera, depending on the technical possibilities, and register this movie and calculate some liveness detection just during the acquisition. So maybe this 3 seconds will not be very disturbing or will be invisible to the person being acquired. Okay, so I'm going to the end of my presentation. So I would like to invite all of you to participate in the next competition, Live That Iris 2015. So we'll check again what is the state of the art this year. It is held as a part of IEEE BITES in Washington. And again, we will have 3 data sets, pattern contact lenses and paper printouts, new artifacts. So if someone participated in last competition, entire data set that we used to train and evaluate methods will now be available as training data set, and we prepared some extra data for you. The data is of course sequestered data, just to check what's going on with liveness detection, with static object detection. If manufacturers or industries interested in testing entire solutions, we have part 2, system-based evaluation, so you can deliver iris recognition system and it will be evaluated using different kinds of artifacts. Okay, I think it was my last slide. I tried to be fast. Thank you so much. Yes, please. No.
Because you observe this person and you tune the parameters towards this specific person.
No, it is. No. It is as I said, we need to have a general model for every eye. So what we did, in fact, we used a set of persons or set of measurement to develop the to transfer the pupil time series or time series related to pupil dynamics into points in this multidimensional space, and then we train the classifier that then classify between the live and non-live subjects. And then once you have this classifier trained, use this as a black box system. So you can just invite new persons. You make the model identification in each acquisition, of course. But this model identification is just to calculate this curve of this shape of the reaction. And again, you have a point in multidimensional space and you use your trained classifier. You do not change your classifier. You use the trained classifier to recognize if it is artifact or not. No, in this work, no. But we did, I think, 6 or 7 years ago, one of our colleagues in the laboratory did a master thesis work related to recognition of a person using pupil dynamics. The accuracy, as far as I remember, it was not, it was not zero, of course. It was a few percent. But it suggests that there is some individual properties in this signal. So it depends on the user, of course, but this model is very general. So this is why we selected, testing different models, we selected the one that is somehow agnostic to individual features, because we don't like to have individual features here. Not in this scenario. We can go further, we can say, okay, maybe we can merge the identification, we can merge subject-related features and general liveness features into one classifier, and we can train this for each person separately and add this information to the template, to the iris template. So it is another scenario, but not in this case. In this case, we do not, you know, we do not use any personal information on lightness features. I thought this because I think that the properties of the display is the display is prepared for our eyes, so it is prepared to display something in visible light. And the iris recognition cameras have filters that cut all that is below, I don't know, 700 nanometers and something like that, just not to introduce any extra information resulted from visible light, because the cameras want to observe the eye in near infrared. So this is why I said that it doesn't work, because we have something that, you know, generates visible light, and we have something that has filter to cut all this visible light that is presented by the Yeah, good point. I didn't check Amazon Kindle. It doesn't work with smartphones, because we use smartphones, and in this scenario, as we said, so we had the iris recognition camera, we had some illumination, and it didn't work. But you're absolutely right that there is another kind of displays that use reflected light to display something. Yeah, you're right. Thank you for this comment. Christoph?
Yeah. The question is, in the production method of these of the contact lenses, don't you have, with a little bit more effort, also the option to generate a 3D object? I don't see why that should not be possible. So you want to measure the shadow? That I understand.
Sure.
But
I didn't tell that it. Yeah.
Can you not generate an artifact that has the same properties?
Of course we can. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Or even, you know, if you have the pattern contact lens just worn on your iris, then again you have, if you check only if something is 3D or not, then it will be probably very easy to forge this method using printed contact lens. You are absolutely right. I told that this method is interested for any flat object like printouts. Yeah, exactly. In fact, if you have the printed contact lens, it may, the pupil dynamics may have also some problems, because if the printed contact lens, if the printout is on the outer part of the contact lens, and in the middle you have bright, you know, clear contact, then the pupil dynamics still works, still can be observed. So yeah, this is why I'm showing different methods that you can probably use in different scenarios. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you. It is not artificial eye.
So good morning, everybody. So I will be presenting on presentation attack detection for the face biometrics. So in particular, I'm going to give you a brief brief outlook on what are all the artifacts that have been presented today, and also what are all the techniques that people are using to identify those attacks, and where we stand, and what are all the solved and unsolved approaches available on the face. So to start with, I would like to mention a couple of the Hollywood movies that have always inspired the biometric researchers. For example, if you look into the left video, which is from the Knight Rider, so people just try to use a kind of mask to somehow hide their identity. So these are kind of confirming themselves from hiding the identity. And on the right side, we can see that a transplantation of in the face. So one person face has been replaced with another person. So that means that you are shifting an identity from one person to another person. So these are a kind of fascinating movies that are present in the Hollywood that always challenge biometric researchers. So if you simply Google on the, if you simply Google and you find how to generate a face artifact, you will get a stepwise illustration how to do so. For example, if you look into the left video, so they will give a stepwise what are all the chemicals you need, how you mix it, what is the percentage of mixtures and everything, and you can add the face artifact on yourself. And towards the right, there is a very interesting website that's called as thatsmyface.com, where you simply upload your photo and you can get a mask of your required size, with required cosmetics, required aging, and with your any hairstyle. So the availability of the technology made the face biometric system more vulnerable to attacks. And in the more practical situations, so for example, if you want to hide yourself from any of the surveillance videos, or if you want to hide yourself from the photographs, if you assume yourself as a celebrity, then if you're attending a party, then if someone wants to take your photograph, so you can just flash a light against the photograph so that you can hide your identity. And if you look into the bottom pictures, where you can hide yourself from the normal CCTV surveillance camera, so only thing what you want to use is a kind of cap with an LED illuminators on your head. You just hold this and you can walk wherever you want, and you can hide yourself from any surveillance cameras. And towards the top right side, so we have a kind of patches on the faces, and you can use these kind of patches so that the face, forget about face recognition, even the face detector won't work under these circumstances. So these are the normal kind of attacks where people tried in more practical situations. And the more real life situation, more real life example came when Android 4 was released with a face unlock option. As soon as this Android version was released, and people tried to put a photo against a camera and try to see whether how it can be attacked. So you simply present a photo against the mobile and you see that the phone is automatically unlocking. So as a result, Android 4.1 comes with a liveliness detection just by using the blink, and this kind of blink is made by conscious law, like you are forced to make the blink, it is not unconscious blink, so it is a kind of conscious blink, so based on the blink they try to say whether it is live or not live. And the very impressive real life situation, really real life case that has been chased in Canada in January 2011, when the person in the left, who is a young person, boarded a plane in the Hong Kong as an old person in the right, and he arrived as a young person in the Canada. So he was using a 3D silicon mask of the old person, and he has all the documents prepared on the old person, and he somehow successful in even spoofing the border agencies. So this is a very impressive attack. So, and the second one on the real life is chased down in June 2012 in London, and towards the right you can see the 3D mask, and this mask has been used by three different robbers, and they have been using it for 10 years, and there are more than 150 criminal cases they have been done, especially in robbery and robbing the banks as well as the gambling centers. So it took 10 years for the London police to chase down this attack. So they were using this mask, and the three persons were using it. So based on this motivation, so it is very, very clear from these ideas that the face can be easily spoofed, and the material that what we can use to spoof this face can be easily available, and it is low cost, and hence the face biometric system are more vulnerable for the attacks. So just to give out this evolution of the biometric attacks has been evolved. So starting from 1903, so there is some illustration on the fake fingerprint evidence in the Return of Sherlock Holmes. So then in 1924, the first systematic study has been published on the fingerprint. And in 2002, so we get first systematic study on biometric spoofing, especially on the fingerprint, was published. And in 2009, the live dead fingerprint liveliness detection computation was organized. And in 2011, we have second live dead 2 fingerprint computation, and also from the live dead iris computation was also organized. So then in 2011, in the same year, we also have face spoof computation, that is the first computation organized on the photoprint. And at the same time, we also have European Tambul Agaza project that has been investigating on the biometric artifacts. Then in 2013, we have the series of live dead, that is the third fingerprint liveliness detection. And again, in the same year, we also have the 2D face spoof computation, that is basically this computation addressed on replay video attacks rather than photo attacks. So then we also have live dead iris in 2013. And in last year, we also have an handbook which will specifically focus on spoof attacks. So this is how the biometric attacks have been evolved in the history. So now coming to in the face artifacts. So the face artifacts can be artificial. Like for instance, you take my picture, which is in figure A, and you just print it on the laser printer, you can get a nice quality of in the picture. In the figure C, you just put my picture on the iPad or any display for that instant, and then you go to the face recognition system and you present yourself. And in the figure D, you can use yet another kind of printer, that may be an inkjet, or you can simply use my figure and upload it to thatsmyface.com, and you can get my 3D mask. So this is a quite easy way of obtaining an artifact if you have the photo of the legitimate user of the biometrics. On the other hand, we can also use the human characteristics. For instance, it may be in lifeless. So for example, you can cut my head and present into system. That never happens, but it may be possible. And also we can alter. So alteration is nothing but you put on the makeups and you alter yourself so that you can hide your identity. And you have a conformant, so you present some kind of expression so that you can hide your identity. And we have non-conformantal, that means that we have a zero imposter attack, that means I will go and present myself as someone else. So these are the different kind of attacks or the artifacts that can be presented with the face recognition system. So now looking into in the literature of about 10 years, so these are all the different kind of presentation attack detection algorithms available today. So this can be broadly classified into two types. You can use it in terms of an hardware, or it may be in terms of a software. So whenever I will say it as an hardware, it is more related to in the sensor, or it is more related to an additional hardware that will be incorporated within sensor in order to detect the liveliness. So this may be using a sensor characteristics, or it may be using a blink detection, or it may be a challenge response. In case of in the software, again we have static and we have dynamic. So most of these static techniques will process the face image in terms of pictures or in terms of frames. And in case of the dynamic, we try to explore the temporal information between the frames. So this is how the general structure of the available presentation attack detection algorithm will look like. Now we get into each of these techniques and try to understand how they are trying to address these kind of attacks. The first thing is on the hardware-based sensor attacks. The very simple example for this is on using multispectral face capture. So for example, if you are capturing an image using both visible and near infrared, and this is how the image capture will appear with different artifact. The first towards the left image corresponds to in the laser print. For example, if you see the quality in the visible spectrum, which is quite good to attack in face recognition system, but if you see that in terms of a near infrared, the quality is somehow degraded. But that means that the characteristics of in a sensor in turn can be used to identify this kind of attacks. In the same type, if you get into a next picture, which is of in the inkjet printer, so usually in the inkjet printer we use glossary paper, which is very high quality, that may appear as very good for the visible, but if you try to present into the near infrared system, because of the reflection, you cannot spoof the system because the face is no more visible in that. And in the similar, if you use a display attack, for example like iPad, which looks good on the visible, but if you observe the same on the near infrared system, but it looks more dark. That means that because of the additional frequency emitted by the screen, the quality of the image is more degraded. In the same way, we can also observe this kind of variation in the 3D mask, also in the visible, where more skin texture are visible, but in case of near infrared, you can see there is no texture information available. And the second kind of sensor characteristics Arduino-based technique is based on the light field camera that we carried out here. So what we observed with light field camera is that basically this is a kind of different camera when compared to a conventional camera, because the light field camera will record not only the intensity, but it also records the direction of each incoming rays. So as a result, you can get a multiple depth images in a single shot. So if you just present a live user, that is how the light field image capture will appear. So you get more number of depth images because of the 3D nature of a presented face. But however, if you just present an artifact using any prints, or it may be with the display or whatever it is, you can see that there is no much variation in the focus, and also the number of the depth images are limited. So our idea is to explore these characteristics of a light field camera to identify the spoof. To that extent, we have our in-house 80 subject database with three different kind of attacks, and we try to see what are all the quantitative results we try to get. So for instance, this is the proposed method that we propose. So for the each instance, we get number of depth images. On each of these depth images, we just do the face detection, and we do the pre-processing and normalization of the face, and then we start measuring the focus. And then once we get all the focus, then we try to measure the variation in the focus when compared to in the live and also to an artifact. So this measured variation will somehow reflect the presence of live subject versus artifact. So for example, so this is how we generate an artifact. So we have print attack, which is we are not using an handheld, instead we are having a more fixed attack. So we have a camera placed and the artifacts are properly placed, and then we capture the image. And we do it for three kinds, that is two print attack, one with laser and inkjet, and other one with display attack. And again, we process these attacks. And if you can see the quality of the image that we obtained, it will look more or less as good as the live persons. And these are all the generated images from the light field when you present an artifact for a light field camera. And we just try to see how good are we in generating the artifacts, because this plays a very important role. If you have a very low quality artifact, then obviously you cannot spoof a system. So in order to understand how good the quality that we generated, we just try to see how the face recognition algorithm will perform when we probe these kind of artifacts. So interesting to see here is, towards the left, you have the distribution of the scores here. So this blue line shows the distribution of the imposter score, and you have the green bars which are showing the distribution of the genuine scores. And interestingly, the spoof attack scores are closely between these two things. So this, as a result, if you allow these spoof samples to pass by face recognition system, then obviously it will deceive the overall performance of the face recognition system. So then we just try to use this variation of in focus, and also the number of images that we obtain in the artifact, to compare within the rest of the available techniques. So we just compared with more than 8 to 9 different available well-established face recognition system, and we found that the use of variation in the focus can reduce the ACER till 5.27. So this is quite interesting, because we are not adding any additional computation burden. Instead, we just explore the characteristics of the sensor itself that is capable of identifying any artifacts. So more information you can find in the below paper. We next get into the second kind of hardware-based attack, that is based on the blink detection. So idea is very simple. You go to the face recognition system, you present yourself, and you just perform the blink. So the upper picture shows the different frames of the video with blinks, and the below video is just an motion extraction. So you can use an optical flow, for instance. So what we can observe here is you can see that the motion is dominating, especially at the eye region. So you can use this kind of information to identify the blink. So what happens if someone comes with my mask and present himself to a system? So you can still identify the larger motion in the eye region. And what happens if you have a replay video attack? So if you have a replay video attack, obviously the use of blink detection does not make that much of impression in detecting the artifacts. So this is one of the limitations of using the blink detection. And the third kind of hardware-based approach is based on the challenge. So idea is very simple. So when you approach the face recognition system, you are posed within the challenge. you do the you perform that challenge and you have the response. This response will be processed further to identify whether you are a genuine or a spoofer. So this kind of challenge include, they may ask you to rotate your head, or they may ask you to read out the text so that they can analyze the lip motion, or it may be a predefined stimulus. So the stimulus will come, they will ask you to look into the different points, and then they try to analyze how fast you are moving from one point to another point. So this is the challenge response. And now when we compare all of these existing techniques from the hardware point of view, we can just try to see what are all the strengths and limitations. The first good thing is about is the generalization ability. So the most of this hardware is based, so you don't need to have, for example, like you in case of an hardware based technique, there is no need to have a separate method for photo attack or a display attack or replay video attack. So if you have a system working on liveliness, it is capable of addressing all different kinds of attacks. And the second thing is it is quite robust. But on the other hand, it is also having a lot of limitation. The first thing is it is high cost because we need additional hardware, and it needs to be user friendly. When you consider the challenge based attacks, if the system is asking you to interact intensively, then it is not user friendly. And of course, the response is very slow, and it demands additional hardware. We then move to the second kind of presentation attack detection algorithms. The first approach is the software based, in which we consider the static approach. The static approach will consider one image at a time, and it will try to analyze the properties of that image to identify whether it is spoof or live. So one such technique is based on the textures, and the popular technique in this direction is based on the local binary pattern. So for example, if you have the image like this, the left image is the live image and rest of three are the artifact image. If you just do the LBP and you try to observe the qualitative results, we can see that use of this micro texture based methods will somehow explore these artifacts due to the print as well as in the display. Especially the last figure is on the display attack, where you can even see that the emitted frequency from the display has also been properly captured from the LBP. So this is one such reason why the LBP is very famous in case of face presentation attack detection. And the most recent work in the texture is based on the binary statistical image features, in which instead of manually designing a filter, they try to design a filter based on the natural images. And the second kind of approach is based on the frequency. The most famous method is based on the Fourier transform. So where you can see that the variations of in the frequency with live as well as an artifact. In case of in the live image, you can observe the more high frequency component, while in case of artifact, especially the print artifact, you get a low frequency. And the extension of this is in terms of a 2D substrum and also in terms of difference of Gaussians. And the third kind of technique is based on the hybrid techniques. So hybrid technique basically combine part of texture and part of frequency to come up with a new scheme. And in addition to that, we also have, so these are the example of so the next kind of hybrid techniques will use component dependent descriptors. That means that, for example, like in case of in the print artifact, you can see the specular reflections. The idea of this technique is to use this kind of specular reflections in addition to the color information to identify the artifact. And the most recent method in this direction is based on the image distortion analysis, which is nothing but an extension of component descriptors, because they use the same characteristics in addition to the texture features. So these are the updates on the static approach. And when we go towards the dynamic approaches, the first very very commonly used approach is based on the optical flow or the motion analysis. This may be using optical flow, or we can use any GMM based approaches. And the second kind of approach is based on the motion magnification. So in case of an optical flow estimation, so if you have in the video of in the person recorded, he is always having a subconscious motion of the head when compared to the background. So idea of this motion techniques is to exploit those small minor motions of in the head when compared to in background. So the second kind of technique is based on the liveliness measure, which is using an Eulerian video magnification. So if you have a minor motion, that will be further enhanced using EVM. So the second kind of technique is based on the texture method, which will use the same famous LBP. So LBP top, that means that you are going to perform LBP in all three directions, and then you combine them and you just pass it to a classifier. And the third kind of techniques are based on the frequency based. That may be using a dynamic frequency, like you compute a frequency for each frame and then you try to see how it is changing throughout the video. And the second is based on the visual rhythm. So you do the same frequency analysis in this method also, but you do it on the difference frame. That means that you first take the frames and then you compute the inter difference, and on the difference frame you are going to do the frequency transform. So these are all about the dynamic approaches. Here also we can see some of the hybrid schemes which will combine motion with texture, or it will combine motion with frequency methods. So when we just go through all of these techniques, we can find a lot of strengths and limitations in case of static methods. So no doubt the static methods are they don't have very high generalization ability, but they can have medium generalization ability. They have fast response because they work on image. And the second thing is it is low complexity when compared to other kind of presentation attack detection algorithms. But the limitation is we need to use different classifiers, and the robustness is very low because these methods are highly sensitive to the noise. And in case of dynamic methods, we have good generalization ability. That means that if you have a dynamic method working on photo, it is expected to work on video or video replay attack. And the limitation is slow response, we have low robustness, and we have high computation. So just to give idea on what are all the public databases that are available on the FacePad, so we listed out 8 different databases. The very first database that was released to public is in 2010, which is of 15 subjects, and most of this database is having the photo attack. And the most recent database that we have is in the bottom, that is 3D face mask database, that is having 17 subjects with 3D mask. And the database what we have in our GUC is on light field camera with 3 different kind of attacks and with 80 subjects. I think this is the largest database available for the public. And we have 2 different competitions that has been organized in the face presentation attack detection. The first competition was organized in 2011, and this competition particularly concentrated on print photo attack. So the for each subject they have a photo print that has been captured using Canon. So you capture the image using Canon high resolution camera, then take the image, print it on laser, print it on inkjet, and then you construct a video on that, and then you present it to the system. So we have 6 or 7 teams participating here, and the most of the techniques used in this computation is based on texture, motion, and also the blink detection. And as we can observe here, is the perfect or the 0% of total error rate is achieved on the texture as well as texture and motion algorithms. So that means that the use of texture based techniques, especially on the print photo attack, makes little bit of sense in detecting this kind of artifacts. And the second kind of second computation is based on the video replay attack, which has been organized in 2013. We have 8 different teams participating here. Here also you can see the similar kind of techniques like texture with motion, or image quality measures using frequency with texture and all. So the best result has been observed for the texture and motion, because this will make sense, because this is a video replay attack. Always using hybrid screen will give you better results. So just to summarize what are all the things that I presented now. The first thing is the quick overview of the face presentation attack detection. So I just presented what are all the techniques that are present and what are all the different kind of artifacts that has been explored till now. And we also have 3 widely studied attacks, especially on the print, photo print, replay video, and 3D face mask. And the third, we know each of the advantages and limitations of the existing schemes. And what are all the challenges? The first challenge is the generalization. So most of these available presentation attack detection schemes are based on the classifiers, or based on learning the decision. So as a result, if you learn learn on the photo attack, it may not work on the video attack. So there is a need of generalization. The one way to address this problem is by using a liveliness measure, but still liveliness measure at this point of time is quite difficult for the face. And second kind of attack is based on the unseen attacks. So we always build a system based on the seen attacks, because we know while building the system, we know we have print artifacts or we have video artifacts. How this already developed system will perform when we present an unseen attack. So this is also kind of challenge we need to address. And the third point is on performance evaluation metrics. In order to have the uniform evaluation, or in order to assess how good is the algorithm, we need to have the common performance metrics. So ISO standards is progressing in this direction. And the last challenge is to have a large scale database that is not available now. And the most important challenges that we are expecting in very near future is the yet transplantation. So we don't know how face artifact is going to work. So with this, I would like to end my presentation. Thank you all for your time. Yeah, it is there, but I didn't include it here. Yeah, at present we didn't try. Maybe if we get a new project, definitely we try that. Guess we can go for the coffee break now. 20 minutes.
I can get my remote control so that I have a pointer.
Yeah.
In practice, the mold is printed with a 3D printer, so that I can adapt any kind of face.
Great presentation, Rebel.
So I took a 3D scan of my face, and then a 3D reconstruction of the face that I want to return. And I just construct two molds, so it fits perfectly on my face. And the 3D contours might be a little bigger than naturally, but that's not measured. But everything else is correct. It works. I'm not good with a paint job, but the rest of it is good. Okay, works. Nice. Way too many slides, but let's just skip through it. should just generate in PDF.